Mamura-san mentioned the issue of the APNIC fee structure, and because this is the APNIC meeting, it is an issue to be considered within this context. We did have a session, an open session, about the fee structure during the week, and that was one which was attended by a few people, but certainly not as many as we have in the room here. So what I would like to do is to make a similar presentation here as I did at that open session to prompt a little more thinking and a little more awareness of the sort of issues we're facing with the APNIC fee structure and the sorts of solutions that we might have. Now, this is not a proposal for a fee structure. It's what I'm doing here is describing the framework that we have for the fee structure today and how we might adjust that framework as an example to achieve some of the solutions or the objectives that we seem to have with the fee structure today. So I'd ask you to bear that in mind as I make this presentation, that it is an example of a fee structure rather than a specific proposal. In order to turn this example into a proposal, I suppose we would need to have some more consideration and some more discussion, and there will be a mailing list established, if not already, which will be announced and which will allow the issue to be discussed as time goes on by APNIC members. Okay, so what I'm going to do is talk about a bit of the background to this problem, some of the principles on which the fee structure needs to be established, this example or candidate fee structure solution, and how we would assess its impact, some implementation issues, and then maybe some discussion about it. One of the background issues has got to do with APNIC's financial position and how that position might change in future. So what this chart shows is that over a number of years between 1999 and 2002, APNIC enjoyed some quite substantial surpluses, revenues substantially higher than expenses, which was very fortunate because we were growing very rapidly at that time. And as I mentioned, the EC has a decision in place that APNIC must maintain a capital reserve sufficient to the next year's budget. When your next year's budget is growing that rapidly, you of course need a surplus in order to keep that capital reserve up to equal the following year's budget. And that's what we had in those years, and that was quite useful. From 2003 onwards, however, we've had balanced budgets and a very balanced situation in 2004. 2005 was projected to be a line ball budget where revenues equaled expenses, and we only had a surplus because, as I mentioned earlier, of the foreign exchange gains. In this year, we've got a budgeted loss, a small loss, which we'll be aiming to overcome if we can, depending on circumstances. But that's what the projection is at the moment. The point here is that it looks good for APNIC to have a balanced budget. I mean, we're not aiming for its own sake to make a profit or make a surplus each year. But what I think you saw during the presentation of the annual report is that APNIC services are increasing in demand, in line with demands from the community for preferred services, and they're also increasing in line with demands that we don't seem to be able to do much about, such as these, let's say, political pressures that have been applied and that seem to be increasing at the moment. They came about, firstly, I have to say, through the whole ICANN process and since then compounded by the WSIS and related processes. So we're actually incurring larger overheads of that nature. And in some sense, we also have to be careful about what overheads we might incur in future. We've got to be in a stable and secure position in order that some change in future doesn't adversely affect and suddenly affect the viability of the registry. Now, we do have a one-year capital reserve, but no one likes to eat into that unless it's necessary, and we may well eat into that this year. But having started on that process, possibly going into some deficit in the annual budget, it is time to have a look at whether we're actually doing the right thing financially with the fee structure and so forth. There's a list here of the new activities in recent years. This is not just over the last year, which you've heard about, but over the last few years, and during which, as I say, we've had balanced budgets, but we have managed to increase activities, services, and of course, expenses during that time. I won't go into all of these. I think you see what they are. It's got to do with route servers, which we've been asked to deploy. Some very practical and important research and development actions, activities, training, which is under increasing demand, meetings, including increased participation in meetings, and so on and so forth. So these things will continue in future. At least the APNIC EC so far has expressed a comfort with the activity levels that we're undertaking and the budgeting and so on, but as I say, the future needs to be a little more secure than possibly it is at the moment. The current fee structure that we have was established actually in 1996, 10 years ago. At that time we had three tiers of membership, small, medium and large, and for those tiers we had the same annual fees as we do today, $2,500, $5,000 and $10,000 per annum. The fee structure at that time was optional. You sort of decided when you joined APNIC how big you felt or how big you wanted to be, and you could select to be small or large. And that worked quite well while the APNIC community was small, and it worked quite well until the Asian economic crisis of about 1997, 98. But at that time, the option to select a small membership tier was, I think, too attractive or irresistible for companies that may have had other financial priorities. It was quite a few years ago, 1999, that we established the mandatory tier selection. So your tier, membership tier, small, medium or large, was determined by the address holdings. And that is not meant to be a case of paying for addresses, but the address holdings do seem to give a reasonable indication of the size of a company, the capacity of a company to pay to support APNIC's operation, and possibly the it seems to be a reasonable way on which to base the annual fee. So we have added additional tiers in the last few years to the APNIC fee structure, but in fact we haven't inflated annual fees for any of the inflation that's gone on over the years, and nor for the fact that the value of the US dollar has reduced. So the reducing value of the US dollar is quite useful for members in that the fees that you pay in real terms in your own currency tend to go down. It's the opposite for the APNIC Secretariat, though, because most of the income of APNIC is in US dollars, and yet most of the expenses are not in US dollars. So, in fact, we've sort of suffered a double blow, if you like, in that there's been a lot of inflation over the last 10 years, certainly, and there's also been over the last six or so years this devaluation, which has reduced the value of the US dollar for the Secretariat. Okay, so what does the current member fee structure look like? It's based, as I say, on an annual assessment of the address space holdings of each member. And the total address space holdings are calculated to a prefix, a particular prefix in either IPv4 or IPv6, and there is a set of prefix ranges that set your membership tier. So in the table here, you can see the small membership level is $2,500 a year. If you have up to and including a /19, then you'll be established at that small level. But once you exceed a /19 of IPv4 space, that is, you'd be bumped up to the medium level and pay twice as much. And there's a 3-bit increment between each of those tiers, so it goes from 22 to 19 to 16. It's actually a factor of 8 there. 3 bits is a factor of 8 in terms of the total address space holdings, but a factor of 2 in terms of the annual fee increase from tier to tier. There are the other aspect of the current APNIC fee structure, which we've heard a little bit about from Momura-san, is the NIR fees, which have been quite an inconsistent aspect of the APNIC fee structure ever since the current per address fee was introduced. So that's quite different from the annual fees which normal members pay. In the case of an NIR, a per address fee is paid at the time of allocation and only once only. So it can be quite a high fee in the case of large allocations. It's paid once, it's not paid again. And what that means is that the situation for an ISP that is a member of an NIR is really completely different and very hard to compare with the situation of an ISP that's a direct APNIC member. It brings up issues of fairness and consistency and also reliability of income, because of course APNIC has got no idea, and the NIRs themselves probably have not much more idea of when these large allocations are going to occur. So you can have some unexpected revenues, or you can have an unexpected lack of revenues, just depending on when the allocations are actually occurring. There's no actual fee charged for each member of an NIR, but the NIR pays a total annual fee according to the same scale. So most of the NIRs are in the extra large category because collectively they've received a great number of addresses, but they're not assessed or calculated, the fees are not calculated in terms of the number of ISPs actually involved, which can be in the hundreds in some cases. Okay, so if we're going to have a look at revision of the fee structure, it's useful to ask why and what would be the rationale for changing the fee structure, and on what rationale should a new fee structure be based. And I think, as I've alluded to already, there's a question of overall revenue maintenance for APNIC itself. There's the part of that is the unpredictability of the current structure involving NIRs, which is a problem for both APNIC Secretariat, APNIC the community, and the NIRs themselves. There's also the possibility, now that the NIR structure is active, there's also a possibility of NIRs being formed almost at any time. And the impact of forming an NIR in a country like Australia or India would be pretty substantial in terms of migration of members from the from APNIC to the NIR itself. Okay, there's another rationale, as I've explained, is that we don't have any, we haven't had any provision over the last 10 years for the effects of inflation or foreign exchange gains, and so there is a possibility with a revision of the APNIC fee structure to adjust the overall revenue levels. Now, I'm going to be showing you an example fee structure that could be applied to APNIC fee structure shortly, and that fee structure is actually engineered or designed to provide an increase of between 10 and 15% over the current revenues from the current fee structure. One of the underlying features of our fee structure is to base annual fees on address holdings, and that's something that's not questioned at the moment. I don't know if anyone has ever questioned that since that was established. But the new fee structure, or any example fee structure that I show here, is based on the same principle. Again, as I said, reflecting the size of the organisation and the capacity to pay a share of the APNIC operating costs. There's an issue of in the current structure of small versus large members. As I said before, there's an 8-fold increase in address-based holdings for each 2-fold increase in the annual fee. And that, over the whole range of tiers in the fee structure, gives a pretty phenomenal difference in what you could calculate as the effective per address cost per year for those members. So, for instance, an ISP that has a /8 has got 16 million addresses, obviously, paying an annual fee of $40,000, which gives an effective per address cost to that ISP of 0.2 cents per address, per year, that is. So an ISP that charges you $10 or $20 a month for your dedicated address is doing pretty well on a 0.2 cent per year cost for that address. The ISP that holds a /20, however, has only got 4,096 addresses paying $2,500 a year, and so they're paying 61 cents per address. So there's clearly a huge difference there in the effective cost for small and large members. And that's something that has been raised from time to time as a sort of issue of fairness within the structure. And there's also, as I said, an issue of fairness or consistency, at least, in the situation of a member of an NIR or a member of APNIC. And it's very hard to compare what is the cost and benefit, for instance, in each of those cases. And so there are issues of fairness there as well. Also under this question of rationale, it does seem that the fee structure to which NIRs are subjected to should be similar to or comparable with the fee structure of normal APNIC members. That's in the interest of predictability and fairness. We do have a migration of members to and from NIRs because, of course, where an NIR is operating in an economy, we do allow ISPs to choose one or the other. And it makes sense that in making that choice, there should be some easy comparison between the two options. So in what I'm assuming in this current discussion is that that any new fee structure would be based for members of NIRs on the APNIC fee structure with an agreed discount in recognition of the fact that NIRs provide real and valuable services to ISPs in their economy. There's also something which has been raised also a number of times, which is that members of NIRs don't actually vote. So an NIR which is assessed at the extra large level has got, 64 votes in the current structure? They might have 200 or 300 members, and though that entire membership body is related to or is represented by a total of 64 votes, which is just the same as any other extra large member of APNIC, and it's proportionally a very small voting entitlement. Okay, so just to recap on how the fee structure works, we've got a framework where there's a minimum fee level and a minimum recognised address space holdings, and that represents the lowest tier of the fee structure. And then you increment your tier according to your address space holdings, and with each increment you have an increase in the fee structure. So there's a number of parameters into that fee structure. The minimum fee level for address holders at the moment is $1,250. The increment is to double the fee with each tier. The address space at that level is anything up to a /22, and the increment in address space is 3 bits per tier, which produces, using a pretty simple spreadsheet, it produces this table of fees. So by way of example, we could plug some different parameters into this formula, setting, for instance, a minimum fee level of $360, a fee increment, again, of double per tier, starting at a minimum tier of /24. Now, that's quite useful because we do have quite a number of members now holding historical address space, and a member holding a /24 currently has to pay $1,250 a year, and understandably, anyone who considers that as a fee that's payable for something that historically they previously received for free is not particularly happy generally to pay that fee. Now, from that lowest tier, then an address-based increment of 2 bits per tier is used in this example. And so, using the same spreadsheet, we get a number of tiers. We're not going for, in this example, sort of small, extra small, extremely small, but just tiers A, B, C, D, E, F, etc. So at tier A, that applies to an ISP or a member with up to a /24, and it costs $360 a year. If that ISP has a /16, then they're in tier E, and they have a fee of $5,760 a year. And you can extend that table further all the way up to currently the largest ISPs or members that we have are at the level of a /6, and in that case the fee is reasonably high. Okay, so this is how we would calculate, based on the sort of framework that I've described, this is how we would calculate a new set of fees and a new structure for APNIC. Now, what's the impact assessment? We, of course, need to look at what would be the impact of such a change on APNIC members themselves, on regular members, on NIRs, on the members of NIRs. And we also have to critically look at the impact on the APNIC budget. That's one of the drivers for this change. So projected revenues are possible to calculate based on what we know now about APNIC's membership and address holdings. So here is a table which shows the total current distribution of about 1,160 or so APNIC members, showing how many members fit into each prefixed tier. For instance, at the /18 level, there are 89 members who have up to an above a /19, but up to including a /18. So those 89 members would each pay $2,880 a year instead of the current $5,000, and that's a reduction in that case of $2,000 a year. So the lines in blue here represent members whose annual fee is reduced, and the others are those whose annual fee is increased, all the way up to three of ISPs in the very largest category who have up to a /6. So they've got more than a /7. This is three members who have at least two /8s in their address pool. And instead of paying $40,000 a year, this fee structure would have them paying $184,000 a year. We can also, because just to clarify, the idea here is that rather than NIRs paying as individual members, NIRs would pay according to the detailed address holdings of their own members. And we do, since we've been allocating address space directly from APNIC through NIRs to the members of NIRs, we do have at APNIC a pretty good idea, at least, of the distribution of members of NIRs, at least of those who are active. So the table here shows that in APGI's case, that's the NIR in Indonesia, they've got 33 members who'd fit into Tier C, two members in Tier D, and two members in Tier E. There are a total of 37 members. And the bottom table here shows the fee structure, the fees that those members would pay based on the fee structure I've just described. Now, this doesn't take into account any discount for NIRs. So what the tables show in aggregate is that there's 365 members in total that we know about of six NIRs. The total fee revenue from those would be $1.5 million without any discount. Now, the overall impact on APNIC's budget, the discount that I'm modelling here in this example is a 50% discount for members of NIRs. So the first line in this budget shows that our current budget expectation for NIR per address fee revenue is $700,000. The example fee structure with a 50% discount would give $778,000, which is an 11% increase in revenues from that particular source. The normal regular APNIC members, we currently have a budget of $4.23 million for year 2006, but based on today's figures, the income from the example fee structure would be 4.83. So in fact, the parameters that I've selected in setting up this example were not selected randomly. They were selected to provide exactly that type of increase in the total and in the distribution of APNIC fees. But it's just an example, and this is all driven by a spreadsheet, and you can play with the numbers and try different scenarios and see what those scenarios would produce. So this that is the summary of an example fee structure and how we would assess it in terms of impact on members individually, impact on NIRs and the members of NIRs, impact on APNIC's revenue. But we've got a few things to discuss. What if we follow this type of framework, what should the parameters actually be to achieve what overall revenue expectations? Should the parameters be fixed or variable? APNIC has had a very fixed, stable fee structure for many years. At least one of the other RIRs, that's RIPE NCC, actually varies the fee structure each year according to the the revenue requirements of their activity plan. So rather than driving a budget from expected revenues, they drive the revenues from the expected and approved budget. That would require us to, if we took that approach, to take a variable approach to the parameters of the fee structure and vary them each year or from time to time. The NIR discount, which is written in here, is 50%. It recognises the value of services provided by the NIR to the members of the NIRs. So is that the appropriate discount level? Should the same discount apply to all NIRs? Not all NIRs are actually the same. There are NIRs with not much experience and NIRs with a great deal of experience, and so possibly the value of services provided by those NIRs should be assessed differently. Complicates matters a little bit, but it would be possible to apply a scale of discounts to NIR fee structures. A question which came up in recent discussions about this is that NIRs have already paid fees for address space in expectation that these are sort of once and for all fees. Should there be a recognition of the fact that this address space has been paid for already, in a sense? And finally, as you saw, there's some quite significant impact from this type of fee structure revision, potentially, on quite a few of the APNIC members. So to introduce that in one single step would be quite dramatic a change. And so in order to ease that transition, should a new structure be introduced immediately or possibly over one or more years to control the budget impact of that? So the next steps that were decided at the special session that we had on this during the week was to establish a mailing list, which I think has been set up, WG for Working Group -APNIC-Fees. To continue discussion on that mailing list for anyone who's interested in this topic, that is, to report back at APNIC 22 about what the discussions have produced and possibly a proposal at some point in future. It may not happen at APNIC 22, it may happen later. So that's where we are at the moment with the fee structure discussion. So I'd be very interested in answering any questions or hearing any comments about this topic. Here comes Mr. Chaundy. Could you use the mic? Yes, thanks.
Chris Chaundy from Seoul Communications. Just a question. While things are, if things are being thrown up in the air, the other question that I had is, does RIPE set its fee structure based on the euro? I notice we still base our fee structure on the US dollar, which is somewhat ironic given that it's a currency outside our region. Given that the majority of APNIC's expenses are incurred in the country where it is resident now, would it not make sense to remove the variance of the exchange rates by actually charging in that particular currency?
Okay, thank you.
Trent O'Callaghan, work for a local ISP here.
Hi.
In Perth. One side of this that you haven't considered is the network engineering side of pricing, in that aggregation is forced on all those smaller ones by not getting discount at the moment. I'd like that to be considered as you go forward.
Aggregation at the routing level, do you mean? Or
and also
level?
Exhausting of the address space is slowed by forcing people to go through larger blocks, possibly.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, just it's a point of view that, mm-hmm. that I don't see considered so far.
Okay. Okay, well that's... I'm not sure about the address space aggregation issue. There is an issue of business aggregation, which is something that happens in this sort of age of mergers and acquisitions. And it's another problem that we have with the current fee structure, in that if you have two members who aggregate at a particular level, they may have been responsible for two sets of annual fees. In a small minority of cases, does the aggregated business actually have enough address space to bump them up to the next fee level. So you've got an economy of scale which is having a detrimental impact at, and an unpredictable impact as well in that sense.
So if I simplify the point I'm trying to make is the size of the routing table has a size of the memory in routers impact. Mm-hmm. And so the smaller we keep the routing table, so the more aggregated we keep it, mm-hmm. The cheaper the internet is to engineer.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yep. Well, if there are no other comments, I suspect it might be coffee time. Is that someone wearing a watch? There's time for us all to think about these and chat about them over the coffee break, which is scheduled for 10:30 to 11. There should be time later on in the day also for open mic and question and answer sort of sessions. So all of this is up for consideration and discussion. I'd encourage you all, and particularly the APNIC members in the audience here, to have a think and a chat about this, and maybe some questions and issues will occur to you after that. So let's take a coffee break then, and come back at 11:00.